This is The Book Group on RNIB Connect Radio. RNIB Talk and Support run telephone social groups for adults with sight loss. There are telebefriending groups which help you socialise by phone for friendship and support, or you can share your passion for books and reading by taking part in a telephone book club. We'll tell you how you can take part in your own telephone social group later on in the show. But for now, let's listen in to our telephone book group on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, I'm Peggy. I'm 80. I'm from Scotland, but now I live in West Wales. I have macular degeneration. I've always loved reading. I love anything and everything. I read all sorts of books and always have.
Hello, I'm David. I'm from Chester and I'm 57 years old. I went blind when I was 6 months old and I have very badly scarred retinas. As far as reading goes, I do like a lot of horror fiction. I like some crime fiction and I like a lot of classics.
I'm Lillian and I'm from Wigan. I like reading a variety of things, particularly like crime.
Hello, I'm Supriya. I come from Aldershot and I'm 42. And I have been blind since I was about 2 years old, and I had a condition called retinoblastoma, which is a tumour in the eyes. I like reading classics and any other books, mainly historical fiction, romantic fiction, and I'll try anything once.
I'm your host and today's facilitator, Robert Kirkwood. And today, the group are discussing The Rules of Seeing by Joe Heap. And a slight spoiler warning, although this conversation has been edited for broadcast and we avoided talking about the ending of the book, at least until the microphones were switched off, there still may be some small spoilers for the book. The audio version of The Rules of Seeing, that's available commercially, and thanks to HarperCollins, also available in the RNIB Talking Books Library, is read by Cariad Lloyd.
Getting lost is always a possibility. Just a chance to meet new people, she'll deadpan, though it's truly frustrating. She wants to ask sighted people what it's like to know where everything is when you're standing still. What it's like to know that the path is curving to the right and that there are trees over there and a lake on the horizon. Do they see these things constantly, like an instrument playing an unbroken note? Or do they come in bursts? Is it difficult, seeing all that stuff? She knows that sighted people can be distracted by things they see, like a man crashing his car because of a flashy billboard. Is it difficult seeing and carrying on a conversation or walking? She guesses it must be like walking with a stick. You get used to doing both. Nova comes to the steps of the Modern Languages building, and her feet remember the height of each stone, so that the climb is quick and easy. She feels for the door and grabs the handle just as someone starts to open it. She starts to topple forward, then catches herself.
Oh, sorry, I saw you coming and thought I'd be helpful.
The girl's voice is panicked.
Not to worry!
This is something else Nova does not understand. How someone can see through a window or a glass door. No matter how often people use words like transparent and opaque, the idea feels impossible, like trying to sing two notes at the same time. Seeing through solid objects is as strange as passing your hand through them, like walking through walls.
Nova is 32 years old and she's about to see the world for the very first time. Nova can do many things. She can speak five languages. She can always find a silver lining, and as an interpreter for the Met Police, she can tell when someone is lying just from the sound of their voice. But there's one thing Nova can't do. She can't see. When her brother convinces her to have an operation that will restore her sight, Nova wakes up to a world she no longer understands, until she meets Kate. As Kate comes into focus and their unlikely friendship blossoms, Kate's past threatens to throw them into a different kind of darkness. Can they both learn to see the world in a different way? Now, some might say this is quite a controversial book to be doing at the book group, but first of all, Supriya, what did you think of the book?
The main character and I, we both have sight impairment. We couldn't be any more different if we tried. I didn't identify myself with the character in any way. I know I don't have to enjoy a book, but lots of things she was talking about I didn't really understand. And also I did keep wondering how the writer of the book knew exactly how this person who had been blind and who's not anymore would feel. I'd be interested to know what research the author did into sight loss and if somebody regains their sight, how they react. If I suddenly gained my sight, I'm not sure I would like it at first, but I would be happy. I wouldn't be apprehensive like the character. It'd be a huge adjustment, I would imagine. The book, it took me a while to get into it. A couple of chapters in, I was really hooked. So I just wanted to finish it as soon as I possibly could. So I did enjoy the read, and I absolutely detested Tony's character. I'm not sure about my feelings for Kate. I felt sorry for her most of the time.
Peggy, what did you think?
Well, like Sophia, it took me a wee while to get into it. But once Kate and Nova had met, I did really enjoy it. Some of it was very strange, and I'm not so much felt sorry for Kate. She annoyed me a lot of the time. I felt, you know, some of the times the way she behaved was really, you know, I felt she was being a bit silly. But I only understood her character better once she'd been to visit her mum and been rejected, and then the contrast with the acceptance of Nova's family. And I thought, well, poor Kate had never really been taught how to develop a relationship. And, you know, I think a lot of her difficulties came from that. And as for Tony, well, I wanted to strangle him. Mm. I found him. But on the other hand, I do think he was quite sort of typical of someone who is manipulative and controlling and, you know, cut her off from... She didn't seem to have many friends, but he did his best to cut her off from what few she had and to cut her off from her family and everything. I didn't like him at all.
We should mention that Tony is Kate's husband and he does play quite a big part in the book. We won't go into that just yet, but David, what were your thoughts?
I kind of felt a bit the same as Supriya did. I actually didn't much like Kate. I thought she was rather ineffectual and strange and silly. Again, I didn't like Tony much. I actually did quite like Nova. I always get a bit nervous about books that try to deal with issues of sight loss, whether it's to do with losing sight or what you can do if you can't see or what happens if you regain your sight. And I think actually this author did that quite well. Mm. I thought it was actually handled quite well. But Kate, I couldn't get on with Kate. I mean, if I'm reading a book, I quite like to think that I could get on with the characters that I'm reading about. And I just couldn't cope with Kate very much at all. Of course, nobody liked Tony.
Yeah. Now, Lillian, what were your thoughts?
I enjoyed the book. I thought it was very perceptive and thought-provoking. At first, I actually thought that Kate was going to lose her sight because of the head injury, and that would kind of mirror Nova regaining her sight. But that obviously, that wasn't how the story panned out. Again, I thought the character of Tony was very menacing from the start, and even when he wasn't directly in the story, it was almost like he had a presence and there was a tension of what might happen. You know, you were waiting for him to come back and do something. I don't think the details of the operation were given. I think that was quite vague as far as I remember. And it wasn't explained why she was blind. She was just born blind. But I thought the gradual way in which the world came into focus for her was actually very believable. And I'd be very interested to know what kind of research Joe Heap did. And the reason I find that believable was because the way she started to see things was actually the mirror of how I stopped being able to see things. It was very strange. Right, things like the effects of movement, you know, she was feeling kind of giddy because she could see things moving. Well, I started to feel giddy because I was starting to lose my sight. And when I looked at fast-moving objects, I started to feel really dizzy. And the loss of hand-eye coordination, she had to learn the hand-eye coordination, whereas I lost it. I couldn't, she was saying about learning to access depth and width, and again, I started to lose that. It was very gradual. Problems with colour, started not to be able to distinguish between colour. And also, she talked about auras of light, and I had a lot of that, and I had a lot of kind of flashing lights as well. So I actually understood her frustrations, but in a reverse way. So I thought, I would really like to know how he discovered how she would perceive what she was gradually learning to see. And I do understand how it would be really, really frightening for her to understand what she was seeing. And I think it was very believable that she, at one point, said, well, I don't want this, you know, and she stopped using a newfound sight because her perception when she was blind far outstripped her perception when she could see. And also, I thought, when she was listening to people's voices, I thought that was totally convincing because, again, I've learned that I can pick up an awful lot from people's voices, not just recognising them, but I can tell people's mood from the voices. So I thought all that part of it was really fascinating. And the love story between Nova and Kate, I thought that was quite touching, really. I know Kate could be annoying, but I thought they seemed to care for one another. It wasn't just a physical attraction, although, of course, obviously, it was on Nova's part at first. And also, I think the way Kate gradually accepts her sexuality, I think that'll provoke another line of discussion among when it goes, you know, the general public. So I can't say anything else because the rest of the stuff that I've thought about is about the end, so we can discuss that later.
Yeah.
The odd thing is that in my early 20s, I did have quite a lot of sight restored. I've lost it again since. But I did have quite a lot of sight restored. And the thing that I actually found most difficult was if you actually saw an object on a table, I would actually have to pick it up before I recognise it. So I'd know something was there, and I might have an idea of what it was, but I actually have to pick it up. So if I had a mug, I could see it, and I could see there was an object there, and I thought it was probably a mug, but then I had to sort of pick it up to verify it. That actually wore off after a while, and I would be able to recognise a mug through seeing it. But it's interesting what Lillian was saying about the voice thing. It's very difficult, actually, to lie to a blind person because sighted people don't cover up their voice in a way that they might cover up their facial expression.
Yeah.
When I meet people for the first time, I get this impression of them. I can't see, I have no light perception, and I say, oh, they're not very nice, or, well, they're really nice people, and I'm 99.9% right.
It works, yes, you're absolutely right. Well, it's really easy to tell. I don't know about people who've lost their sight in later life, but certainly for me, and certainly for my wife, who's also been blind since birth, it's really easy to tell if somebody's being insincere. You know perfectly well if they're not saying what they really think.
Yes.
That's right, yes.
Yeah. And perhaps blind people make a more honest judgment because we're not judging people on how they look, and of course looks seem to be very predominant in society nowadays, how people look.
Yeah.
Because we've not got that, perhaps we're kind of assessing something on a deeper level.
I think I can also detect meanness. I don't know how, but I can. Meanness or being nasty or somebody who's willing to help you no matter what.
But certainly sighted people are much, much better at covering up or altering their facial expressions than they are their voices. They don't actually trouble to do that, and it gives them away.
How long have you been blind, David?
Since I was 6 months old.
Oh, right, OK. Yeah, I lost my sight completely when I was two.
Oh, right, so we're both
fairly good vision until then.
Yeah.
So I can't really identify with this character at all. I haven't got a clue what they're talking about, really.
But it's interesting, this idea of being a bit frightened about being able to see again, having not seen at all. I would imagine it would certainly be at least daunting.
Yeah.
But if somebody came up to me and said, I can give you your eyesight back, I mean, I'm now nearly 60, and I think to myself, well, do I really want it? But I think the curiosity would drive me mad. I'd have to go for that.
Yes. I would say yes. No matter what I have to go through, I would say yes.
Yeah.
It was very different as a book, and it was very interesting. And I do think on the whole, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did too.
Although it took a wee while to get into it at first. Partly because it started off with Kate, and she did, I did feel that she had a lot of sort of annoying traits in her character. Once I got into the story, I couldn't put it down. Really, it was very enjoyable.
But on the whole, it just made an interesting book to read.
Mm. I like Nova.
I
thought she was a really gutsy lady.
Yeah, and you know, her relationship with her blind tutor.
Yes.
It was lovely too.
Lovely. Yes.
And you know, some of the kind of jokes between them, that's the kind of jokes that I make with people, you know. And within my family, we make those kind of jokes. It's only me blind. And I know that some when I've been with other people who don't know me that well, and we've said something jokey, and I heard them gasp, you know, because we've made kind of... kind of black humour, really, it is, I suppose, you know. But that's the kind of thing she seemed to have with him, you know.
Well, we all have different coping mechanisms, I think.
I think it's, by and large, I think it's sighted people have greater problems at coping with blind people, because they don't like, you know, they think that blind people are going to be really sensitive and get upset.
Yeah.
But we actually don't. And if we make jokes about ourselves and our blindness, it does kind of wrong foot sighted people quite a lot.
Also, I find that the sighted people, what they think is going to offend me doesn't. But what they think is not going to offend me does.
Does, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. So my husband said we met someone who we knew, and they said, oh, see you soon. And he said, as soon as they said it, this lady who said it, she actually cringed when she said it, you know. And I thought, well, that's just an expression of speech, you know, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. You know, when people ask me, oh, did you watch the TV? Oh, sorry, did you listen to the TV? I would rather you said, watch the TV. Yes, I watched the TV.
Yeah, I say that. Well, I still watch certain things on the TV. So
I still have some vision, peripheral vision, and I watch the television, and even if it's all blood, but it would still never occur to me to say I listen to it, although mostly I do listen to it, but, you know, I watched the programme, or I saw such and such last night.
Yeah, it's just a term of speech, isn't it? Yeah.
But did anybody find it was a bit strange that she couldn't recognise the simplest of objects? I can't give you an example purely because I've forgotten them, I'm afraid. I should have written them down. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I thought, for such a highly intelligent person as Noah, she had trouble recognising simplest of objects and things. What does a car look like?
The car, yeah. That's what
that was one of the things that I thought was very clever of Kate to give her the little toy one so that she could feel the shape.
Yeah. That's what I was saying earlier on. If you have got some sight, even if it's a small amount of sight, enough to recognise something, it is very odd if you've never been able to see it before. You look at something and you think, what on earth is that? And then when you pick it up, it's obvious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know it must be the kind of link between your brain and your eyes that needs to grow. I found that I've not forgotten what things look like, though. I've been registered blind for 8 years now, and I can still remember what things very clearly, because I had not brilliant sight, but I had some sight for most of my life. So don't think I will ever forget, but I think if you've never known, it would be difficult to... Yeah. Interpret.
So what I'm saying is, why did she need a toy car to know what a car looked like? Has she never felt a car?
I think the explanation was that you feel a car's such a big thing. You could feel its bumper, you could feel the windscreen, you could feel door handles and things, but you couldn't put both hands out and feel a whole car.
Yeah. Whereas
the toy one, she could feel the whole overall shape of it.
Yeah, and then imagine what it would be like multiplied to something huge.
I don't know really, because I can imagine exactly what it's like, but I don't understand that, I'm afraid. Some of the things that they were saying in the book, I just didn't understand at all, where maybe my experience is different. Mm. I have an image in my brain as to, you know, what things look like, and I couldn't say to you if I could see what they would look like, of course, not having had that experience.
Mm.
But having smaller models of things, I mean, maybe a cathedral, I have felt models of cathedrals where I've gone, you know, touristy things, and they show me what they look like. That's useful, because nobody can feel all 400 feet of architecture. But something every day, like a car or something, I found certain things strange in that book, but perhaps that's some people's experience.
But if you translate the car to your experience of architecture and see it from that point of view, that she feels the miniature and then can visualise it in a much bigger size.
Yes. Yeah.
I thought that was very clever.
Mm-hmm.
She sits back, kicking her Doc Martens under her chair. The quick echoes of their words tell her that they are in a corner booth. He's trying to judge her reaction. When she speaks, she feels like an actor, her responses pre-prepared. Most people think of blindness as darkness. I know, but you can see black and white and red in good light. No, that's not what I mean. Her hands form shapes in front of her, which Alex guesses are supposed to convey hesitation or thought. People think of blindness as binary, as an on or off switch. Either you can see or you're blind, right? I guess so. But it's a spectrum. Even if you can see, you can only see a tiny portion of all the light that's really there. Did you know that? I've always found that comforting, in a stupid way. It's cool. Alex says nothing. He's looking at his sister in her biker jacket and I want to believe t-shirt, wondering how she can still infuriate him this much after all these years. A ridiculous sandwich is sitting in front of her, with a toothpick Union Jack flag claiming it for Britain, oozing sweetness onto the plate. Just think about it for a second. You feel the heat of the sun like I do, but you can't see the infrared light glowing off my skin. And you can't see radio waves, even though you know that when you turn the radio on, you'll hear the breakfast news. And it's all made of the same stuff. You just call the bit you can see light. But it's all light, fizzing around our heads. Even at night, when you can't see your hand in front of your face, there's light shining all around.
Cariad Lloyd reading The Rules of Seeing by Joe Heap. And we'll have more from the book group after this.
RNIB. Supporting people with sight loss.
Would you like to chat over the telephone with a group of like-minded people? RNIB's award-winning telephone social groups are small, friendly and lots of fun. A great way of making new friends and a chance to socialise without leaving the comfort of your home. Telephone RNIB Talk and Support on 0845 330 3723 or email talkandsupport@rnib.org.uk.
The RNIB Helpline is your direct line to the support and advice you need. Whatever your inquiry, the RNIB Helpline team are only a call away with practical and emotional support so you can face the future with confidence. Our friendly, specially trained operators are just a phone call away from 8:45 a.m. and to 5:30 p.m. every weekday. We can help with information on everything you need to know about the RNIB, from eye health, advice on how to volunteer, reading services and loads more, or we can simply offer a listening ear. The RNIB Helpline, here for you on 0303 123 9999. That's 0303 123 9999.
And now a return to the book group on RNIB Connect Radio. This month, the group are discussing The Rules of Seeing by Joe Heap. Now, what you were saying, David, I think the book begins with a quote.
Suppose a man born blind and now adult and taught by his touch to distinguish between a cube and a sphere be made to see. Could he, by his sight, before he touched them, now distinguish and tell which was the globe, which the cube? William Molyneux, in a letter to John Locke.
The answer we've had both from you and from the book is no, they couldn't.
No, not... I mean, you'll be able to see it, but then the message wouldn't quite get through to your brain. You'd have to use the sense that you were used to. I mean, eventually it would come. You know, if somebody put a ball on the table in front of you, you know, eventually, probably it wouldn't take very long either, you know, before you actually say, oh, well, that's a ball. But it's like if you lose your sight, then your hearing has to adjust. So that if you can no longer see, then without realising it, really, you actually start using your ears in a way that you never have used before.
Yeah.
And then once you start getting sight back, then again you have to learn to do that. It's a developed skill.
Yes, I mean, I think most people, sighted people, just take their sight totally for granted. I know I did, and when I had good eyesight, took it quite for granted. And, you know, it's only when you start to lose it, you think, oh. And you do have to develop your other senses. I've had to do things like really developing my memory, because I can't write things down or pick up a bit of paper to read a telephone number, so I have to learn it.
Yeah.
Remember it. You know, things like that. And I do think you listen far more carefully. And I do agree with what was said earlier about picking up impressions of people from their voice, because they don't bother to hide their voice, whereas they might put on a smile when they're really scowling.
Yeah.
In many ways, your perception is sharpened.
Yeah. And as well, your sense of touch as well, because you might not be able to see something anymore, but because I have a memory of what things look like, if I touch something, I know what it is.
Yeah.
But I think you have to develop that. You know, at first, right, if it's something, you know, not as obvious as you know, something like a ball or some kind of shape, I think touching it and you think, what is that? You know, well, oh, yes, I know what it is. Now, I found that with jewellery when I want to put jewellery on and, you know, have to touch the piece and think, is it? Oh, yes, I know it's such and such a brooch, you know, that I have.
Rule of seeing number one. If object A occludes object B, object A is closer than object B. The rule is simple enough, but tricky to put into practice. Everything is two-dimensional to Nova. Streetlights through the window look like bright stains on the glass. Clouds in the sky look as close as the polystyrene ceiling tiles in the ward. Nova remembers a quote from Jorge Luis Borges, going blind at 55. He described losing his sight as a process by which everything near becomes distant. Learning to see is like the opposite of that. Everything that was once spaced out is now tightly compressed around her. The sky pushes down, walls vacuum pack her. Rule of seeing number two. Objects look smaller as their distance increases. Again, this rule is easy to understand, but judging how big something should be is difficult. She cannot tell the difference between the colourful gumballs in the bowl by the nurse's station and the squishy yoga balls that they get the patients to sit on for rehab. Often she will reach out to grab an object, only to be told it's on the other side of the room.
What did people think about the actual rules of seeing? Some of the things that were blowing her mind, like being able to see through solid objects and reminding herself not to be frightened of things like smoke.
Very perceptive. I'd be interested to know how he knows these things.
Yeah, because some of the things that she does find amazing, it is something that you would never consider if you could see. I mean, I'm not going to talk about the ending, but at the ending there's a terrific storm, you know, and earlier in the book there's a storm, and of course she finds that quite amazing, because she's never seen the lightning before, and the way when the rain hits the pavement. You know, there's a kind of mist, isn't there, when it hits the ground. And it's just things that you would totally take for granted and never give it any thought.
Mm.
Now, before her sight was restored, how did you find the description of how she navigated and was helped or not helped by members of the public?
I think that was, again, pretty spot on, to be honest. You know, she said she had a mind map of parts of London. Well, just this last weekend, we've been to Edinburgh. And I've been to Edinburgh quite a lot when I could see. But we've not been since I was blind. And I wanted to go down. It was with my husband who could see, who has a terrible mind map. He's rubbish at directions. But we wanted to go down to the grass market and we were at the castle. And I said to him, I think somewhere around here that there's some kind of cut through to the grass market. And there was a policeman on duty and he went to ask him. And he said, yes, down those steps over there. And I knew exactly where I was. And when we were in the grass market, I said, I want to go and see Greyfriars Bobby. And my husband said, well, which way is it? And I stood there and I thought, and I said, I think if we go this way. And he said, how do you do that? So I think you do develop a mind. I mean, I must have had a good mind map anyway, but I think you do.
I always have a map in my mind. And when I do the route with my guide dog, if I don't get that map in my brain, until and unless I get it, I don't do the route. And once I get the map, I can do it in my sleep.
Yes.
I could be half asleep. I could go on my own even.
Yes.
And I won't get lost.
Yeah, it's interesting that, because if somebody says to me, I live in Chester, if somebody says to me, oh, there's such and such a shop on the right-hand side, you walk down Bridge Street, I'll know exactly where it is and how to get there.
Yes.
It's something you do develop.
Yes, I think it connects with the thing that Peggy said about having to improve your memory as well.
Yeah.
Because I'm in a choir, and of course I can't read the words or see the music, but I just learn everything off by heart, and I manage perfectly well.
Yeah, well, I used to belong to a choir, and I do exactly the same thing, and it actually was a lot easier and a lot less daunting than I thought it was going to be. There was everyone else reading the words and listening to it, and I thought, well, you know, I might struggle a bit here, and I didn't really.
No.
I mean, I have braille music done by the RNIB, but the thing is, in the church or in a concert, I can't open my folder fully to read the braille anyway, so I have to memorise it.
Yeah, and also, in fact, we our choir, we performed at the Langochlin High Stedford a couple of weeks ago, and the choir mistress, she was talking to me afterwards, you know, and, you know, she's saying well done to everyone, but she said, how do you know when to come in, because singing various parts, and said, I listen and I count the beats, and, you know, very rarely get lost, really, but I think it's just concentration when you're blind.
It is concentration, but it's quite funny because when I belonged to a choir, obviously everyone else at concerts had their folder with their words and music in, and the choir mistress said to me, she said, David, you look a bit odd without that. Would you mind just holding a folder?
Yeah. Like, we've had that. I have a black folder with nothing in it, just to match everyone else.
Well, I mean, I find that you go into a restaurant and they give you they automatically hand everybody a menu, and I just sit with mine open and let either Ken or me read out to me what it's like.
I know. But I can't read Braille either, because my sight's only gone in the last few years, and I did start learning Braille, but I found it very hard. I think it's a bit like if I was going to start learning a foreign language at my age. You know, when as you get older, it gets more difficult.
I think the vast majority of Braille readers learnt it in childhood.
I think so.
I mean, I sort of did give it a try when I went to the Motherwell College and for the, you know, which deals with sensory impairment, and I had a sort of feel, and I thought, that makes absolute, I will never learn that. I don't know whether my fingers aren't sensitive enough or what, but, you know, I thought, I'll just have to listen to everything.
Yeah, and I already was, I mean, I'm not a whiz, but I was quite good at technology anyway, because I was a teacher, so I knew how to operate, so I just rely on using, you know, software on my computer.
Yeah, me too these days.
Aren't we lucky, really, in this day and age that there are so many things, I mean, like, quite apart from the wonderful talking book, but so many things that, you know, computers that talk to you,
mm-hmm.
all these sort of, and, you know, everything. There's so many things. And you think, what in God's name did people do many years ago when even trying to look at things and by candlelight, if you've not got very good eyesight, must have been difficult.
Yeah. I think it must have been years ago. I think it must have been much more isolating to be blind than it is nowadays.
I tell you, the most useful thing, I still think there is nothing like human support, though, from another person.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anyone's ever come across the app Be My Eyes. It puts you in direct contact with a human being and you actually talk to someone. And they talk me right through the whole process of setting up my smart TV.
Goodness.
So that right from box to use. And, mm-hmm. and that is something that I could never have done without another human being to help me.
I wouldn't. I'm just trying to remember. Did Nova depend very much on technology? I don't think there was. It wasn't. I don't think that was flagged up very much in the book, was it?
And also, I don't know. I got the impression from the book that blind people have fantastic jobs and they can just walk into a job.
That is a common misconception.
If only. As I started to lose my sight, my employer decided they didn't want to know me anymore.
I know.
It was just before the Disability Discrimination Act came into force.
Right.
And they just said, go sick till your time to till it's time for you to retire or you'll be sacked. Mm. Thank you, lovely. Having worked for them for a long time.
Well, I could have kept on working with, they offered me the assistance of a classroom assistant, but if you teach secondary school children, unless you've got a really, really good, strict classroom assistance, it doesn't work. You would be really struggling because teenage children aren't sympathetic. You know, they'd be getting up to all kinds of things. And I've spoken to teachers who've lost their sight and tried to continue working, and they said it doesn't work. You know, it's.
I mean, it's given me an idea. I might approach the police and see if I could interpret or, you know, transcribe interviews, because I've been looking for a job for 9 years and I have a degree and I haven't got a job, and
yeah.
I did work once, so I just got the impression that, you know, she just had this job and before that she was doing this and that. That was fantastic, but
yeah.
Not really the case.
And she could choose her own hours as well, it seemed.
Yeah. And then she gave up that job. Oh, goodness.
Now, there was a point in the book where Nova was grabbed before anybody said anything to her that they were going to help her. Does that ring true as well?
Yeah, it does,
yes,
very much so.
Yes, but I don't always mind. Some blind people do. It depends what situation I'm in. If I'm desperate to get something done and somebody grabbed me, helped me, well, you know, just move on, really.
Mm.
Say thank you and move on. I wouldn't reject it.
No, I was going to say I've been taken across the road when I didn't ask.
I will not be taken across the road if it's a road I don't want to cross. I'm afraid I have to.
No, I'm
usually very polite, but if somebody grabs me without my knowing, I will say, "Excuse me, can I help you?"
Then at least
it starts off a conversation. Then, and I think you need to do that because I really don't think that's because you don't know what they're going to do. They don't know whether you don't know whether they're going to mug you, whether they're going to ping your wallet.
Oh, no, I don't think I've ever been grabbed like that, not had a conversation. That's never happened.
Oh, that happens quite a lot.
And also, I think if you have a guide dog, less people are likely to...
I was going to say that, yeah.
Yeah, that does help.
Yeah, I was kind of... you know, grabbed and taken across the road. I mean, I must admit, I was waiting to cross that road, but, you know, the bloke just kind of grabbed my arm and marched me across. But it's not happened since I've had my guide dog.
I found one of the hardest things is learning that you do sometimes have to accept help, that losing a lot of independence and you know, learning to let people help you, if you like, and learning to ask for help, I found very difficult at first.
Well, I've no objection to receiving help, in fact, but from my point of view, it has to be the help I want. It has to be something that I want done and not something that someone else thinks I need.
And then the opposite of that is I've been into shops and asked, could you tell me where such and such a thing is? And the shop assistant has said to me, it's over there.
Over there, yeah.
I said, oh, and?
Oh, yeah. And the supermarket was here. It's an aisle such and such. Yeah. Where the hell is aisle such
and such? Well, I've done that. And since I've got my dog Jasmine, I've kind of purposely turned to the dog and said, now Jasmine, do you think you can find aisle 9? Are you so clever? You know?
Well, it was just the old joke a lot of blind people about the guide dog owner that goes into a shop and picks the dog up and starts swinging it round, and the shop assistant says, don't do that to your dog, and the guide dog owner says, oh, he's just having a look round. Very silly.
How do you learn to see? Because all that extra light, those X-rays and cosmic rays and radio waves, they're all really there, Alex. This big field of pure light is rippling all around you right now. You can't see it. Alex says nothing. He's watching her face, her body, reading silently in a language she doesn't know.
Can we talk about the book's narrator, Cariad Lloyd? What did everybody think of the actual narration?
I thought she was terrific.
Yes.
It was beautifully read, I must say.
Yes. She had a lovely, clear voice, and she sounds really young.
Yeah, she does.
Yeah, but I thought everything, her intonation, her expression, I thought it was lovely.
And the way she changed the voices for different characters.
Yeah.
Very well read indeed.
That is a remarkable skill that has, and not all narrators have it, but I thought she was terrific.
Yes.
I hope she does more, because she was really lovely to listen to. And she definitely had a lovely voice just to listen to, quite apart from the fact that she was reading the book well.
Yes, she had.
So it's safe to say you liked it.
Nova goes on. So, say I'm an alien, and I've got big old bug eyes. I can see all those extra colours, so your puny human vision seems pathetic to me. I could cure you with my ray gun, because to me, you seem to need curing, and you would see all the light. Night would be like day, shining with colours you've never seen before. She pauses for effect. What would you see? Would you understand it all? Would it scare you, Alex?
Now let's get some final thoughts on the rules of seeing. During this recording and beforehand, we were very aware about giving away spoilers to the book. We've possibly given away some ticklers or teasers for the book, but there's a whole thriller aspect that happens in the last third of the book that we're perhaps ignoring. So how would you describe the book to someone else? If you were to describe it in a few words, would you call it a thriller? Would you call it a love story? Would you call it a book about Nova's sight? What to you was the book about?
Well, for me, it was more about Nova regaining the sight. That seemed to be, for me, the predominant thing, rather than, it's almost like the love story was the secondary thing, the way I read it.
Mm.
I think perhaps people who don't have sight loss may not see it that way. They might focus on the love story, and so especially the fact that Kate, really, she finds, I don't mean this flippantly, but she finds her inner lesbian, doesn't she, really? She didn't think she was a lesbian, and in the end she decides that she is, so.
It's difficult to sort of separate any of the bits, because there were so many strands and they were so cleverly interwoven that really it's difficult to look at it in parts. But, you know, all I can really see of it now is the whole thing. And including the way it ended, the whole thing was very cleverly woven together, various strands, and very perceptive about lots of things, about the way the police reacted and all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
How far can we say? Can we say, let's say, Tony doesn't take Kate leaving very well, and maybe leave it at that, yeah.
Understatement. But I think he'd have reacted just as badly if she'd left for a man rather than a woman. I don't think it was just...
Oh, I think it was his masculine...
Yeah.
Oh, and he was very, very self-centred and manipulative and very not nice altogether.
No, it was horrible, that scene, again, we can't give it away, but you know the scene in the interview room? I mean, he's so aggressive, isn't he? And I would imagine the police, if any police officers read that, they'll be cringing. If that's the impression that is given of a police interview.
At least you hope they'll be cringing.
When she regained her sight, she didn't seem to have any counselling or anything. She was just let loose from the hospital and that just...
She did have some help because somebody was teaching her how to recognise objects, putting balls in... balls to coloured.
But I know what you mean, it's kind of psychological counselling. They just seemed to focus on the physical aspects of it, didn't they? Yeah. Whereas, to be honest, when I lost the sight, I had help kind of physically, but I did actually have some psychological counselling as well, which I found really useful.
Well, you have to have a strategy, and I would think you need a strategy just for much as regaining your sight if you never had it, as you do for losing your sight.
Yeah, I would.
You have to have some kind of way of dealing with it, and maybe her rules of seeing was her way of coping.
Yes,
I think so. I think that probably was her sort of mechanism for detailing her thoughts, maybe more than anything else.
She had a very ordered mind, obviously, because of the jobs that she'd done, but she obviously had a very organised and orderly mind, so that, as you say, was a way of organising her newfound ability to see.
Yes, and looking at learning to see as like learning another language.
Yes, yes.
I thought was clever too.
Yes.
So many of them rang completely true.
They did, yes, they did.
So would you recommend The Rules of Seeing?
I would recommend it to anyone, whether they're blind or sighted.
Yes.
A very nice book altogether.
Yes, and I'm going to recommend it to a couple of friends of mine who are sighted, who are avid readers, and I will be interesting to discuss it with them, you know, to see it from a different point of view.
Yes, I'd like to discuss it with sighted people.
Yes.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to do that, yeah.
Okay, everyone, thanks so much for joining us today on the book group.
Thank you, bye.
See you next time. Bye.
Okay, thank you, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Someone has left the conference. Someone has left the conference.
To join a group, either telebefriending or a telephone book club, please email talkandsupport@rnib.org.uk. or call one of the two following numbers, 0845 330 3723 or 0207 391 2218. Thanks to RNIB Talk and Support. You've been listening to The Book Group on RNIB Connect Radio.